passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's is when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
It is Monday, the day after. Hello, everybody. It's John Pollock and Waiting with you on a special Tuesday edition of Rewind to Raw, live from Toronto. How are you, Way?
I'm doing well. Yeah, thank you for accommodating the request to delay the show till Tuesday afternoon. I really just kind of hit a wall on Monday. So appreciate the wait, everybody.
You know, sometimes wrestlers out there are like, you know, they'll be at the end of some incredible stretch and at the end they're like, yeah, my knee's bothering me. And then they look in there, they're like, dude, your knee is like completely shot. Like, how much were you going on? I feel that was Way on Monday night. That was like you were mentally just taxed by the end of this particular week.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, it probably a combination of the travel and just, you know, the constant stream of wrestling and content and recording and all that. So bound to happen to anybody. But, you know, thank you for accommodating, John.
It gave me the opportunity to watch two episodes of Raw last night. So that was that was what I did. 22 years apart, but nonetheless, because we will be talking about a 2002 episode of Raw later this week, which I seriously did not know when I was going to have time to watch this thing. So you did provide that opportunity for me to watch like 5 hours of Raw on Monday night. I mean, how else to come down from a wrestling heavy weekend than watching? Boy, dude. Do I have thoughts on that 2002 Raw? You want to just talk about 2002 Raw instead today?
Sure. Why not?
No other news. No, you gotta pony up for that one. Post Wrestling Cafe. You think we're taking it easy this week? We got UFC 300 week. We're going back to watch Hogan and Rock, a legendary segment to set up their WrestleMania, and then an even more legendary follow up that is beyond insane. The follow-up to this. I remember this being god-awful, the follow-up to this, but rewatching this was just, I was on sensory overload of watching this. So this is going to be a very fun review as we chat about the February 18th, 2002 edition of Raw. And sometimes you and I will guess, why did this particular Espresso executive producer choose this episode? And all I'm going to assume as a hint for hardcore Rewind Away listeners, why this person chose this episode of Raw is the famous, what you gonna do coming up this week, a special Friday release of Rewind Away. I actually have to go out of the city on Thursday for a funeral. So I will be away all day long on Thursday. So Friday, we are coming back big and bad with Rewind to SmackDown with Way and Neil Flanagan on the cafe. We will have a Rewind Away show and MCU Later will be dropping this week. And that's just a preview of the weekend ahead. Windy City Riot with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord, John Cena and Kate back on Saturday night with Collision Course. We've got the NWA coming together on Sunday night and a UFC 300 review with myself and Jack Wanon happening Sunday morning post pro res. Dude, if you saw it, knocked on our door and looked at our post schedule and our schedule had to take a urine test, dude, we'd be banned for 4 years. That's how much we're firing on all cylinders and then some this week at Post Wrestling. Can you tell I'm on coffee number two?
I can tell there's a different energy about 12 p.m. Tuesday John Pollock compared to 12 a.m. Monday John Pollock.
You want to get to my core, okay? You just send that comment, man, you guys sound tired, okay? That just destroys my soul. I'm ready. I'm coming out aggressive today.
Let's get into it. Yes, let's go.
Well, you're going to get it on Wednesday night, that being the footage from Wembley Stadium at All In last August. And Tony Khan was interviewed. This interview just went up with Justin Barrasso of SI.com discussing the All In backstage footage and Tony Khan confirming, stating, quote, AEW has a great track record on delivering what we advertise, and it is real footage. He said the Young Bucks will show backstage footage from All In, the most important event in AEW history, the world record holder for the most tickets ever sold for any wrestling record, over 81,035 total, and it was an important night backstage as well. He goes on to state the decision is based on putting on the best show for AEW, as well as driving interest for Dynamite and our Dynasty pay-per-view on April 21st. This is real-life footage that affected many people, and it will air for the first time on TBS during Dynamite, and ending it with the Young Bucks are wrestling for the world tag titles at AEW Dynasty against longtime rivals FTR. Their rivalry is one of the most significant ever in AEW, and there is a good reason why the Young Bucks are showing this video. So, I mean, clearly they are aiming to garner a lot of interest for Wednesday's show. As we have noted, like the last 2 weeks, they have performed well by their competition those nights, it has been very low numbers by Dynamite standards. Do you think, Wei, that this is something that is going to, at least if for nothing else, result in a boost and curiosity for people to tune in and see this footage? Is this really in the bubble? Like, yeah, are we going? What do you expect on Thursday afternoon when we see these numbers and what it says about the interest of this footage?
I think it'll be strong. Yeah, I think I think the bubble when it comes to this story is pretty big, you know. And this is the type of thing that I think it's a stunt of I don't know, wild proportions, you know, the type of which will garner enough interest from anybody who's even heard about the story. So I think it'll do really well, but I don't think it that really matters as much as how they will capitalize on the attention to draw people back in, you know, using this to hook people towards checking out Dynamite maybe for the first time in a while. Could be, you know, it will be effective, but will it leave a lasting impression of any sort to draw enough people to return the next week and then the week after? That's all that really matters.
Yeah, I think everyone has weighed in on thoughts going into this. And I think most people are, okay, let's see how this is presented. And if you can adequately parlay this into business, great. That is the goal of any type of angle. That's the goal of any type of stunt, is how can we translate this to business? And we'll see what happens on Wednesday night. So we will discuss it further coming up on Wednesday. But we have a bunch of news and notes to get into. First of all, let's start off with Vince McMahon, of course, selling off more shares of his TKO stock. And this time it is not just being you know, when Mark Shapiro had spoken last month about, you know, we're not in conversations with Vince, we don't know what he's doing with his stock. Well, in this instance, TKO and Endeavor, by extension, were involved in this stock repurchase, where Endeavor is buying over 1.6 million of his shares for $142.6 million, while TKO is buying over 1.8 million for an additional $150 million, meaning McMahon is clearing about $293 million for this sale. And Brendan Thurston had an update that he estimates that Vince's shares are now at about just over 8 million and under 5%, which could come into play in the sense that once you are under that 5% threshold, there is less disclosure that needs to be made public in terms of his transactions. So we might not be getting any transparency regarding Vince's, you know, if there are shares now that are being dispersed. My understanding is that there will be less filings, at least public ones. So we will see how that impacts things. But regardless, it does tell you that there was a business transactions here between Vince McMahon's side and TKO Endeavor instead of Vince just acting independently, and continues to pile up his liquid cash that he has on hand of well over $1 billion. So, I mean, other than going to shop at the World, I don't know what he has all this money in stock for. I mean, this is, we will see what he's going to do with over $1 billion. Like, what would you do with $1 billion just like, you know, under your mattress?
I would maybe use it to get a, you know, nicer mattress, perhaps. Maybe one of those orthopedic ones, you know, the ones that recline, perhaps. Yeah, I mean,
you could probably get full-on spinal surgery done for that amount rather than just bother with
it. Probably buy an android's body and implant your brain so that, you know, maybe this, you could live forever, which would be a bit of a nightmare when it comes to this guy. The guy's retiring, or he's retired. What use is it to hold on to stock at his age, you know, versus just having the cash? Who knows what he might have planned? Maybe he just wants to sleep on the giant pile of money, or maybe whatever, like, you know. So whether or not like it gets reported anymore, if it does go below 5%, at this stage, what is the relevance of a Vince McMahon, at least in relation to WWE business? Like, what is the relevance of Vince McMahon?
I mean, at this point, he's still a shareholder, so he still has a
very 4-point-something%.
Yes. So, I mean, he still has that. I mean, it would be, I guess, just significant if he ever completely divested himself of TKO stock and was fully detached from the company. He is as detached as he's ever been in his lifetime, especially coming out of this weekend. And this is his lone link to his life's work, is now this 4.7%. And that's, so, I mean, when there's a dividend payout, he will benefit from that. But like, his power is gone. There's none to be had at this point beyond having a minimal amount of company stock with, you know, effectively zero voting power attached to it. WWE and TKO, they put out a press release touting the success of this past weekend's set of shows. And we got the usual WWE breakdown of percentages rather than strict numbers, but the gate for WrestleMania broke the previous set by WrestleMania 39. So let's put that into context. When they say the gate record, they're combining last year's two nights of WrestleMania. The single night record going into this weekend was $17.3 million set at AT&T Stadium in 2016 for WrestleMania 32. Now, they reportedly broke that record both nights. They stated that this record is up, this weekend's gate was up 78% over last year's as well. And the event drawing from all 50 states and 64 countries worldwide. They also stated that WrestleMania's viewership was up 41% across both nights versus last year's record-setting attendance. And I would alert people to Brandon Thurston, because we do have a 1.5 million number attached to the 2022 WrestleMania. So if you go to last year and that percentage increase, you can get to a number and then guesstimate where they are when you add 41% off of last year's percentage as well. They never make it easy for you. It's not as though, I don't know, especially with the gate. Like, I don't know why we would just not release the gate figure. It's the two biggest gates, not in the history of WWE, in the history of professional wrestling, were set. The two most financially successful wrestling events in history were Saturday and Sunday night. I would just announce a gate. Why do we have to play this 78% game? What sounds more impressive to you? I would just put, you know, we're talking about probably in the neighborhood of just under $20 million per night. That is an astounding figure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of things that go into this sort of Wall Street communication, or maybe reactions to a percentile just is a bit more, I don't know, digestible for that audience.
Well, they also added, they plugged the merchandise being up through Fanatics, the WWE World at WrestleMania, calling it the highest grossing, most attended fan event in company history. Just doing the eyeball test. I have never seen so much WWE merchandise surrounding an event. And I've been to many WrestleManias. This was another level. I ran into probably 200 world champions on the street.
As is the case, usually, for these sort of events. Yeah.
And then the final things here, touting that SmackDown at the Wells Fargo Center, the largest gate in SmackDown history, Raw being the largest gate in Raw history. And that's noteworthy because last week they had mentioned that the Raw going into Mania was the largest domestic gate for Raw. This press release is just stating largest Raw in history. So that would encompass worldwide Raws, like ones that they've done in the UK. And that Stand and Deliver, they're calling the most attended ever, with the 16,545 number that they announced on the broadcast as well. So, I mean, it was a super successful weekend for the company. It has generated a lot of mainstream coverage, both going in and coming out of the show. And I would say we're going to get into this episode of Raw. It feels as though that momentum is not going to die down. They have a lot of interest in the product. It's almost as though the ethos that is being espoused on the programming is our company's on fire. Like, that's the mission statement, essentially, is like, we are on fire. Look at how much business we're doing. And that is what is being reiterated on the programming. Like, we are telling you, this is a hot product, and we have the numbers that are supporting that statement.
As they should. I mean, they're trying to, you know, build, obviously, constantly interest in the stock. They're trying to, you know, announce the arrival of a new regime that is has brought this company to great heights. And when you're hot, you should be telling the entire world that you're hot.
All right, let's move on to a few other notes, because I know a lot is going to be focused on tonight's or last night's edition of Raw. Mick Foley, we had spoken about this, and he is pulling the plug on his plans for one final match. He put up a video and stated as well with this message, "With my symptoms of dizziness and lightheadedness and consultations with two different doctors pointing to a concussion, I have decided to call off my quest to have a final match on my 60th birthday. I am really grateful to all of the great stars who expressed great interest in being in that final match, some of the biggest in the business, and to all of you who wished me the best." So in the video, he had stated like he had only done some light training and was getting concussion symptoms. And that was something that we had actually spoken about, was when he after he was told to retire by WWE, and this was when they were going to launch a program between him and Jon Moxley in 2012, and then Foley was not medically cleared and they were not going to put him in a match situation any longer. And Mick talked about his final matches in TNA, and that he was getting concussions without even direct damage to the head. Like, he would take bumps and they would just rattle the body and cause concussions. And the fact that, you know, he had, you know, relatively light training and he was having this, I'm glad that he had the people around him and came to the conclusion that this is not the best idea for me, and this is probably the wisest choice that your body could not be telling you any more clearer. And that's, you know, something that you need to listen to when you have head trauma and susceptible to concussions. And Mick has had, I can't imagine what the total number is, but the documented amount that he has had alone is, you know, it would be cause for concern with all of this.
It's concerning to hear, you know, just even in trying to do any sort of light training, he's his body's in this sort of fragile state. I mean, in many ways, you look at that and say, we thought it'd be a lot worse for Mick Foley by this age. But, you know, certainly his ambition to have a final death match or any single match at all at age 60 was met with a lot of concern. But, I mean, I tended to look at it also with equal concern as well as admiration for somebody who wanted to lose weight and get his life back on track and using this thing as motivation. So I, now that he doesn't have this goal, I hope he's able to find that motivation some other way. Maybe a nice leisurely swim. Maybe aim to do 60 laps in a row for his 60th birthday. That would be kind of nice. So I hope he loses that weight and finds that motivation some other way.
Maybe he can do the CN Tower climb next year.
I don't know. I mean, sure. Yeah, he can. He could join our team.
Open spot, if he so chooses.
Postwrestling.com/WWF. We're looking for donations.
Yes, we are. Wei and I will be making our second attempt at the CN Tower climb next weekend, I think it is.
No, it's the day of Dynasty.
That's a week from the Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Okay, I better start
coming
training.
Coming up soon. Matt Hardy has become a free agent, according to Fightful. He had disclosed on his show that he had been offered a contract by AEW and was weighing his options and has obviously decided he has not signed and therefore is technically a free agent. Do you have any thought on what is next for Matt Hardy? And could you see him in a coaching role? Do you see him getting a contract, a wrestling contract with one of the major companies?
Hmm.
Obviously, AEW was interested, but the terms were not. Matt did not want to go, at least with that current contract, is opting not to sign it.
Yeah, as a full-time wrestler, is that what you're asking?
Could you see it being a wrestling contract, or do you see him, if he wants to have a full-time role, that it would be a behind-the-scenes coaching type of role?
I think that's very possible. I think at this point, I don't really see him getting any sort of WWE full-time contract. As a potential backstage producer, I don't even know if he's had that experience or really even that ambition, but I don't know. The randomest people seem to get those opportunities. So who's to say Matt Hardy can't? I would actually be very interested to see if he would consider a return to Impact, or TNA, I should say. You know, that is still arguably the place of his greatest post-WWE career success. And I think the combination of like Matt Hardy returning to Anthem alone would generate some headlines and interesting possibility, especially for, you know, a space where Matt Hardy might actually be treated, you know, to the level that I think he wants to be treated as, because certainly during his AEW run, it was a very lackadaisical run, you know, between matches that just simply weren't that good. We all remember that concussion match with Sammy Guevara, to just, you know, really not being featured in any sort of significant storyline, to not really being featured on TV, period. I'm sure he probably doesn't look back on the run too fondly, and maybe feels like he has more to offer this business creatively as an on-screen character.
John Cena was on Pat McAfee's show on Monday. They were taping this at The World. And the key stuff is that he is looking to complete his in-ring days in WWE before the age of 50. He's turning 47 in just a couple of weeks. And he outlined the rest of this year, where he is off to Europe to finish filming Head of State. Then he is going right into Peacemaker Season 2, which will take him till around Christmas. And then he is hopeful of getting a break from Hollywood so he can do one last run in WWE, adding that he's hoping to do that, but not definitive, nor do I think he would be disclosing his solid plans. But that looks to be, at least in his idea of come back, do, I guess, a run up to Mania next year, and then at that point, kind of call it a career, at least the in-ring portion. And I think he's largely at the finish line in terms of matches, as we'll get into in, like, tonight's show. I mean, just pretty much a cameo walk-on for a quote-unquote match.
I never buy a wrestler's plans to retire, and I think it's almost foolish to even suggest it. Like
I said, I'm going to go until 50. I meant 2050.
Yeah, like the guy will be 60 and he can come in and do his five moves of doom, you know, to build one more match if the company calls him and needs him. So what does one last run mean? Maybe he means something similar to, like, you know, this, what we just saw with The Rock in this Final Boss thing, where he would be a consistent presence leading up to a big match at WrestleMania. Sure. Okay. You know, like, I guess that qualifies as, you know, one last run, because it that would require a much more of a time investment. But even then, when the man is 60, I feel like he would still have some time to do something like that.
Friday night ratings. So the big programming on Friday was the Final Four of the women's NCAA tournament. The Iowa-UConn game did 13.9 million viewers. I mean, this game was so popular. Dude, there were people at Ring of Honor that were watching the game as Supercard of Honor was happening. I mean, it has transcended sports to just become this cultural event.
It certainly has, yeah. Outside of WrestleMania, I suppose this was the most talked about sporting event of the weekend.
I would argue this was probably bigger than Wrestle. The Sunday game, it has, the final number is not out yet, but it's going to be around 18, 19 million viewers for the final, which is going to be, I mean, we had consistent records broken of the most watched women's game that broke like three different times over the last week, mainly through Iowa and Caitlin Clark. But that's what SmackDown was up against. They were up against first the North Carolina State, South Carolina game for the first half of the show. And then the Iowa UConn game went against the end of SmackDown and Rampage. But SmackDown unaffected because they did 2.6 million viewers and over a million in the number one show on network programming and beat everything except for women's basketball.
Okay, I don't know if you just froze partway there, or if it was just me, but I felt like a million was left in suspense. But that sounds like a big number either way.
Okay, am I coming in clear here?
Yeah. Your audio is fine. Your video is a bit blurry, but that'll catch back up. So don't worry.
Well, Rampage, on the other hand, did not have as strong of a performance, falling to 267,000 viewers and a 0.08. This would be their lowest numbers ever in their normal time slot. So this was going against not just that huge basketball game, but even among the wrestling audience, you're going against Supercard of Honor, your own competition, and at least the Hall of Fame started at 10:30, and with Paul Heyman, no less, that I would think if there's going to be an audience that's going to be impacted, the Rampage viewership would be that. So, these numbers crashed, and they were up against, I would say, their strongest night of competition of the entire year, and probably one of the tougher Friday nights that the show has ever had in its history.
Yeah. If you're AEW, if you're Tony Khan, how do you interpret this? Do you react to this at all, or is it just business as usual? Because it's
you end the footage on Wednesday for Dynamite. Tune in for part two, the extended cut, the Zapruder cut on Friday night Rampage.
Sure. Yes.
Coming up on Rampage, there was more. The cameras were rolling. CM Punk goes to Nando's. What did he order? And who received the chicken?
Well, I order everybody, you know, if it's a Nando's order.
Tony Khan responds. So Stardom on last notes here. Stardom has announced the final matches for Utami Hayashishida. She will team with Saya Kamatani against Micah and Saya Iida this coming Friday for her final Stardom match. And it's the same card. Julia will do her farewell, teaming with a longtime rival Shuri against Mayu Iwatani and Hanan. And that will be airing on Stardom World. And next week, Rossi Ogawa is going to be holding a press conference with new details about his promotion and kind of the unofficial launch as well. Plenty of discussion and coverage of those news stories coming up later this week as Karen Peterson will be on with WH Park Thursday night for Post Pro Res. So look forward to that. I'm sure they will be discussing this heavily. Stardom running their card last week. And of course, Rossi Ogawa and Julia backstage at SmackDown on Friday. They also appeared on camera at the Stand and Deliver show as well. Well, Rossi Ogawa was showing and then they just panned over to Julia for most of the shot. Rossi Ogawa, I was hoping Booker T was going to give a shout out to all of them, but it was mainly Julia that they focused on.
Yeah, a lot's been speculated about WWE's association with this new Rossi Ogawa promotion. Maybe at this press conference will definitively state whether or not that's the case. I also find it very fascinating that Julia seems to be, you know, she is a free agent now, but is still able to not only appear on WWE TV, but still able to go back to Stardom to finish up her run there. And
as I understand it, she's actually not under contract any longer. That was at the end of the month, and she was committed to this show. So this is sort of the farewell, but it's not like her, you know, she's free and clear now to work wherever.
Similar to the Okada
exactly.
departure in
yeah,
February.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect comparison. And finally, tonight, NXT will have a rematch from Stand and Deliver with Braun Breaker and Baron Corbin defending the tag titles against Axiom and Nathan Frazer, and Natalya will appear on the show. Dynamite on Wednesday night in Charleston, West Virginia, headlined by security footage, will also feature Adam Copeland against Penta for the TNT title, a title eliminator bout between... Can Dustin finish the story? Against Samoan Joe. That will be one of the matches. Mariah May against Anna Jay. Jericho, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata against Shane Taylor Promotions. And a segment involving Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa. So that is all. Where does the security footage run? Do you wait till the end of the show to air it? Do you think it's just thrown in the middle? Like, could you end the show with the security footage?
I think it depends on how they want to treat the segment. You know, what the segment is intended for. We know, obviously, there's some probably, seeking of vengeance for CM Punk's words, is probably the main reason for this. But there's also probably a storyline reason for the Bucks to introduce this footage as well. And what is that supposed to lead to? Do we see the return of a Jack Perry? Do we see some other thing? And is that big enough to close the show with? I think that'll ultimately dictate, you know, where it's positioned. But more than likely, I'm going to guess 9 o'clock.
All right. We'll find out on Wednesday night, and we will be live right after Dynamite, so check out that. The whole schedule is up at postwrestling.com. Again, we got a really packed week going into UFC 300 week, but a lot of stuff on the cafe towards the latter half of the week, including Rewind Away, where we are chatting the February 18th, 2002 edition of Raw, which features the showdown, the face-to-face between Hulk Hogan and The Rock to set up WrestleMania, and the truck attack that would follow it afterwards, where you're left to believe that The Rock is clinging to life by the end of this show. So all that and more coming up on Rewind Away this week. But tonight we are chatting about Raw from 2024, April 8th to be exact, at the Wells Fargo Center. And man, no Tron. They were crowbarring every last human into this building that they could. Over 18,000 tickets distributed, as they had promoted the largest gate in the history of Raw. And I'm curious to see if this is more of a common occurrence that we see. You heard Paul Levesque state when it came to the production side, like, we want the people to be seen. We don't want a gigantic stage that is dwarfing people. And I mean, you can read, oh, that's so kind of like they want to sell seats. They don't want production kills, and they're in this hot period where they can be doing this, and the show doesn't suffer one iota. We will put up monitors so that we can show music videos. We do not need this gigantic Tron if it means excess revenue left on the table.
And I think it's the ability to promote larger numbers, which seem to be all the more important these days, whether online or with the stock, of course. So. I personally don't mind it whatsoever. I mean, it's nice to see big impressive sets, you know, whether on TV or live, but I think it's just as cool to see a sea of people. Like, tonight, like, this show felt like it was a stadium type level crowd, even though it 20,000, but 20,000, it looks incredible on TV.
One of those among the thousands in attendance was John Cena, who noted to us that the main event taping saw Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark over Katana Chance and Caden Carter in 447, and Ivar beating Julius Creed in 705, which I think would be a pretty entertaining 7-minute TV match. And also, they did a deal where the lights went down prior to Raw going on the air and playing the song Nightbird by Marty Amato. And this very much in the style of the White Rabbit campaign. And later in the show, during a Bronson Reed backstage promo, we had the screen flicker with the word hello appearing. Most are speculating this is probably tied to an Alexa Bliss return or something involving Bo Dallas, but those things were notable.
Wouldn't you say more likely Bo Dallas, just given the teaser at the end of the Bray Wyatt documentary?
Well, the graphic was, it had a very Alexis Bliss kind of a feel to it. But, it could be both of them. Like, it would make sense that Bo Dallas would be aligned with Alexa Bliss, given the connections to the character. So Russell Tick's last number was 18,348. On the broadcast, they announced 20,248. And they're also pushing over the 5 days from SmackDown, NXT, WrestleManias, and Raw, 201,294.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now we can just combine shows to, like, we're just going to go to greater numbers now. I mean, it's 201,294. Paul Levesque starts the show as Cole proclaims, "It's the Paul Levesque era." I mean, for the guy who is dismissing, this is not the Paul Levesque era. It's our era. I mean, they're really pushing the Paul Levesque era as the terminology.
Yeah, we've spoken a lot about this, you know, over the past week or so. But it's the clear intent at their sort of branding coming out of this very successful weekend.
And their 17th consecutive TV sellout that even got its own animation on the show. So that's when you know they're all in on these TV sellouts. I'm just curious what will happen when there is a legitimate I'm not talking about they're 200 ticket shy, but it's a clear non-sellout. Do they just quietly drop this? Do they? Because again, your audience, I think it is, it's savvy to a degree, but there is also sort of just the, I mean, as Cody Rhodes has said, if you have the fact and the legend, print the legend. It's pro wrestling. But I'm just curious to see how they will handle it when they finally, when the streak ends.
They probably won't mention it. It'll be business as usual. I mean, I think they've already gained enough value out of this entire thing. You know, I feel like the run-up to WrestleMania and beyond is probably the most important time for this streak to, I guess, stay alive. And now that it's kind of past WrestleMania season, you know, whether or not it continues, I think they already have that value earned.
So the crowd is chanting, "Thank you, Hunter." But he came to thank you, calling it the greatest WrestleMania by every metric imaginable, and introduces the man that is going to lead you into the new era, Cody Rhodes. So Cody is out with his championship, and Hunter congratulates him on ending one of the most incredible title runs of all time. And then Paul Levesque notes, "Look at the gate we drew." I mean, this is just like so, this heartfelt moment of, okay, dude, we made so much money tonight. And Paul announces that 2 hours after WrestleMania, the production team called him. They said, "Hey, we made this video for Cody. Do you want to see it?" I love the idea, like the video editors, just to like bask in the glory of this winner. Like, you guys want to just produce a video for fun? Like, yeah, that's the way this was set up. Not that this was assigned to them. Just let's just do a video. Be cool. And Hunter decided, let's air it on Raw for Cody to see. And it's a great video package by Andra Day with Rise Up.
But, you know, that explanation is so specific that I tend to actually buy it. Like, because what do you really gain from saying, you know, that versus, "Cody, we decided to make a video for you. Check this out." Like, why the whole preamble of, you know, two guys that you know really well back at the studio who decided to show make this and wanted me to show it to you in private? Like, it's such a specific story that I tend to believe it.
It could be true. It could be. Mm-hmm. I would think that at the very least, I would think they had this one in the bank rather than the most. Could you imagine these editors after this weekend exhausted and the idea of sitting down and let's just, maybe it's true. Maybe it's totally legit.
I can believe it. Like, you know, they're artists and sometimes you want to do something to get your emotion out.
It really doesn't. It doesn't matter at all. It was a really great video. Cody is shown watching it. And I like they had the picture in picture of his reactions to it. And this is shots of him on the Independence with Brandy, his return at WrestleMania 2 years ago, losing last year. And then the ending shot where we see Brandy, we see his daughter Liberty, Dusty, and ends with Cody holding the belt. Like, just a really, really well done video package. Mm-hmm. And I do 1000% believe that Cody was seeing this for the first time.
Yes, yes. He has such a great face for, like, he's somebody who really does wear his emotion on his face really well, which is, I think, like, one of the greatest characteristics you can have as a babyface in professional wrestling. It's the same thing that Flair has. You know, anytime he's, I believe, like, when he retired, they showed a similar video. And, you know, if the man is emotional, you will be the first to, we all know it, right? And Cody has that very much the same thing. So it made this little video tribute, I think, a wonderful experience for all that, you know, were witness to it for the first time.
After the video airs, Cody hugs Hunter, and then Hunter gives him the ring, and Cody lays down the belt, kissing it, and asks for Samantha Irvin to announce him again as champion, and she does. I mean, if there was a secondary star of the weekend, it might have been Samantha Irvin, who just got so much praise, rightfully so, right down to Michael Buffer just tweeting about her. And that video, I think that's going to be one of the long-lasting memories of that title win, much like Jim Ross calling Stone Cold's first title win or some of the legendary calls. This, I'm not going to remember the call from Michael Cole as much as I'm going to remember Samantha Irvin in tears announcing Cody Rhodes. Like, I think that's going to be the voice, the call of this, of what's going to be a very significant title reign in company history that I think will be viewed upon from this date.
Very much so, yeah. It's the type of announcement that you really can't stage. You really can't plan. You can't cue somebody to act emotional, you know, in that particular moment. It says a lot about, I think, just how big that moment was, and maybe the connection that Cody Rhodes might have with other employees, not just, you know, fellow wrestlers, but like people that are in the crew, people that are ring announcers. And it says a lot about Samantha Irvin's, again, very wonderful ability to emote and not be able to, you know, keep their composure at times when I think it benefits the situation not to.
Cody then speaks about returning 2 years ago, laying out his goals, and it became reality last night, and acknowledges what Roman Reigns has done. And the crowd starts chanting, "Thank you, Roman."
Mm-hmm.
What a departure here from they finally.
I mean, so much of this show was about speaking beyond the confines of kayfabe, you know, the entire branding of the Paul Levesque era. Well, what the hell does that mean in kayfabe, right? There's so much of like current modern professional wrestling speaks to who praising the creators and praising the performers beyond their characters. And, you know, this was a moment that they decided to, much like all the outgoing champions, set that stage so that the audience can show their appreciation for these epic runs that these champions have gone on.
It says every wrestler has to ask their why. Why do they do this? And he says, this is my why. And he shows a video of his daughter telling Cody to finish the story. And he says, this is what he does this for his daughter and for his family, that when he goes to work and leaves her, he wants his daughter to know that he's going to work in the main event, and ends it by stating, I am Cody Rhodes, once undesirable, became undeniable, and now undisputed WWE Universal Champion. I think one of many t-shirts that will probably be coming. Undeniable, undesirable, undisputed. So there we go. The three U's.
Yeah, I think Cody, again, this felt like a really nice little Town Square announcement of the new King's arrival. So often, like usually after WrestleMania, they would do this. But man, sometimes like new champions don't necessarily get a stage as big as this to just gloat and to bask and to celebrate with the crowd. This felt like a pretty substantial celebration for what, a 2 year build.
Yeah. The Rock appears and comes out to the ring, and we got a chant of the Undertaker, then Rocky sucks, and then asshole. And Rock congratulates the crowd on setting another record for the largest gathering of trailer park trash. And they cheer as Cody lifts his title and boos as Rock puts his Muhammad Ali People's Championship up in the air. And Rock says how Cody completed his story, beat Reigns in the middle of the ring, but I whipped you like a dog, and mentions having that weightlifting belt for Mama Rhodes, and said that by the end of the night, though, when you won the title, Mama Rhodes had a smile on her face, just like your daddy in heaven did. And he was my hero, Rock says, and he was friends with Rocky Johnson. Says, I'm not sure if my dad was proud of what I did to you, but that doesn't matter. And he says, Cody, is there any way I can hold your title? I love wrestling belts. I'm a big collector. This is the company to be if you're a belt collector. And says, I've never held that particular belt. And Cody is confused by this request, but agrees as long as he can hold Rock's belt. So the two men do an exchange of titles. So it's like two foreign diplomats meeting on like neutral ground to exchange gifts at a peace meeting. And they exchange belts, and Rock puts it around his shoulder and says, this just feels right, before handing it back and thanking Cody for this. Rock announces, I've got to go away for a while to become Mark Kerr. And the crowd starts chanting and singing goodbye at him. But when Rock comes back, Cody, I'm coming for you. Whether you're champion or not, Cody says, I'm looking forward to it. As Rock reminds him that 24 hours before you became champion, I beat you. And your story with Roman is over, but our story has just begun. And Cody notes how, Rock, you are my literal boss. You're on the TKO board. And I am your champion. And Rock agrees with this. You are my champion. And Rock states, as his parting shot, I've got a gift for you. And he reaches into his pocket and passes something along to Cody in his hand that is not revealed. And Cody looks extremely agitated as Rock leaves. And thus concluded a 45-minute commercial-free open to Raw between Hunter's entrance and Rock's exit at the end of this for our commercial-free first hour. And, I mean, as clear as day, I mean, Saturday was as clear as day, and really the lead-up to this show was clear that this match was happening, and the question remains when the match happens. If it's as far off as a year from now, Rock's got, like, two projects back-to-back, so it's, I don't think, going to be anytime soon, but laying the groundwork.
Well, it's already big enough for a WrestleMania, isn't mm-hmm. it? You know, I mean, it was from the moment I think they had that first bit of tension at that press conference. It immediately, I think, in many ways overshadowed the Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes program. So it feels like it can't be anywhere but WrestleMania next year if this match is to take place. This was, as is typical now, a very long Dwayne Johnson segment. And I,
this was the same length of the match on Saturday,
but I, at this point, not only expect it, I kind of embrace it, especially, you know, considering this was the last time in a while we were going to see this iteration of Dwayne Johnson as the final boss, which has arguably become some of the best work of his entire career. So I could have used, if they wanted to give me 15 more minutes to top up the hour, I would have been more than appreciative. I thought the scene was really interesting. You know, this felt to me as close to an attempt at a movie scene that you'll see in a professional wrestling setting. Great tension that was built. I thought Cody's facial expressions did a lot of the communicating for his part. And I really just marveled at The Rock's ability to command a crowd's energy without talking, and that was, you know, conveyed through the entire sort of, even before he even really said much of a word, before going on to the trailer park trash line, and then beyond that, it not only provided a satisfying end to this current chapter, the hero has conquered, the Rock himself, you know, is congratulating Cody on doing a good job. But then he also, of course, teased their next chapter and the next match that they have. And then, of course, it ends with them dangling this sort of big, juicy, you know, what's in the box mystery that will carry itself through, I'm sure, until next year, maybe, you know, before we get a full on reveal. It felt like a good post-credits type of epilogue to set the stage for their next encounter. So I really did enjoy this whole thing.
Maybe it was a written contract of, like, he was passing him Vince McMahon's Class A shares that will vest once Cody loses the title to Rock.
It must be. It was probably on a USB drive then, if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, it was very well hidden.
Can't really fit that in the palm of somebody's hand. I've seen some speculation. There's a really popular thread going on around Reddit right now where a poster suggests that it might be a bead from Roman's necklace representing the tribal chief sort of position. And now they communicated that a match was Bloodline rules. We don't exactly know what Bloodline rules entails. And I suppose a theory like this would lead you to think that a Bloodline rules match, if you were to beat the tribal chief in a Bloodline rules match, you become the tribal chief, which would be a really interesting wrinkle here. Cody Rhodes.
The Bloodline presented by Prime.
Yeah, Cody Rhodes, fresh
and
off
vodka. Vodka and Prime fuels sure. The Bloodline.
Cody Rhodes, fresh off of conquering racism years back, now has gained the title of Tribal Chief of Samoa, the Samoan dynasty, which would be quite the reveal. But I mean, the speculation, I think, is wonderful for us to play around with, and it's the perfect thing to kind of add to this already hot storyline that'll hopefully carry us through for the rest of the year.
Can it ascend to the heights of previous lockbox angles?
I don't think that's much of a bar to clear. But, you know, this is a Paul Levesque-led type of mystery that I guess we haven't really seen too much of in this current run yet.
Also, Cody posted his dates for April. He's listed for every Raw this month. He's also listed for two SmackDowns, including this Friday, and the four European dates. And they do confirm, as Hunter had stated over the weekend about the draft coming up shortly, it will be two nights, as usual, starting April 26th on SmackDown and continuing April 29th on Raw. So coming up, it'll end the week of Backlash.
Okay.
And then you would assume everything goes into effect the Monday after Backlash. And how loose things are going to be. Are Cody and Damian Priest going to be separate champions? Because you could make the argument of, you know, the looser rosters have been to the benefit most for at least this latest run.
Yeah, it's not even something where you can say, okay, things are going to be different under Paul Levesque. I mean, Levesque has very much been in charge of the past year where he, I think maybe initially after the draft, tried to like create pretty like strong lines between the two borders. But as WrestleMania season, you know, proceeded, it became as loose as they were under Vince.
And one of the people that is entering the draft is NXT champion Ilya Dragunov, who was in the opening match with Shinsuke Nakamura. And this had a very New Year's Dash feel to it, where it was unannounced matches, and you pretty much got a surprise in all of them in terms of who was in it or some big, it was all designed for pops for the entrances throughout. And this one being Dragunov, who comes in and they had a short match, lands a knee off the turnbuckle, and then rolling Germans by Ilya hits the Constantine special, and then a leaping boot, powerbomb, and the H-bomb to set up the Torpedo Moscow. So got in all his key spots. 4:15, Dragunov gets the win. And actually a fairly like subdued Ilya Dragunov on the Dragunov scale. I mean, this was, not as emotional as usual. He was only like popping like four veins as opposed to like nine.
Well, it was only a 4-minute match. You know, maybe if The Rock hadn't taken up as much time as he did. But it wasn't just The Rock. I mean, it was Cody, it was Triple H, and everybody as well.
Dude, that first hour, I think, it should surpass 2 million viewers, and it may be even more. Like, you have your two biggest draws in the lead up to this from a television perspective, and going for, I would have just sent them out there and be like, you guys go as long as you need to, we'll backstop things. And that was fine. Then this was only to be like a quick teaser of Ilya Dragunov. This didn't need to be long.
Yeah, it wasn't meant to be much other than to say, hey, keep your eyes on Ilya Dragunov, the NXT champion. He's also going to be drafted at some point at the end of this month. Yeah, the match was just kind of okay. I almost feel like, I almost wonder if there's like a better opponent to showcase an Ilya Dragunov than like a Shinsuke Nakamura. Maybe like him versus like a larger opponent, but
Ivar. Did, when in doubt, Ivar.
Yeah, Ivar, yeah.
Although he had just worked.
But, you know, Dragunov versus, like, beating Nakamura, like, does convey that he's at least as good as, you know, somebody who is maybe at this point more of a mid-card, or, you know, or an upper mid-carder in Shinsuke Nakamura.
They recap Damian Priest cash in on Drew McIntyre, and we have JD, Balor, and Dominic in the ring to introduce. First, they run down the haters that doubted them, and Rhea and Priest coming out as champions from the show. Dominic introduces Rhea, who gets a big chant and says that WrestleMania was almost perfect. We had some problems to deal with, but two things came out well between herself and Priest. It's a new era for the Judgment Day, and Balor welcomes Damian Priest. So still throwing in there that, you know, we did have problems at WrestleMania, and indicating that some people failed at WrestleMania while her and Priest were the ones that lifted things up. So still, I think, teasing like the inner issues among Judgment Day.
And also just acknowledging their loss of the tag team titles.
Yeah, the tag titles and Dominic losing too on the show. They all hug in the center, and Rhea and Damian are referred to as the Terror Twins.
Sure, why not?
makes me long for the mixed match challenge if we're throwing out names like that.
The Terror Twins. Okay.
When are the Terror Twins going to get to team up?
Priest also has a new entrance theme in which he actually does the singing.
Oh, he's singing this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They hold up their belts, and then R-Truth appears with his Raw tag title out of nowhere, and the place goes wild for this. Truth says, I brought the tag titles back to the Judgment Day. It's gone full circle. And he wants to propose Miz also joining the group. They are just aghast at R-Truth, ruining their moment. The Miz comes out stating he doesn't want to join Judgment Day. So Balor says they're going to have the shortest reign in history because they want a rematch tonight. But Truth says, we can't. There's only three of us. And Miz is looking. They're like, what, little Jimmy? And Truth proposes a six-man tag against Judgment Day with the guy that we can't see. And Miz says, I want to physically see our partner. But they get jumped by the Judgment Day and takes us into what starts off as a three-on-two handicap match. But this was, I mean, they set this up that keep watching. You know what you're getting. And again, this was teasing something and, more importantly, delivering on it instead of just a tease and leaving the crowd unhappy. Seems like a great strategy, but not one we would always see implemented. So the six man, Pat McAfee refers to Dominic as a dude wipe after you wipe. Cole also, he talks about the WrestleMania viewership increase, and then they get the advantage on Miz after he is sent to the floor. After the break, JD is in control, and then Cena's music plays, so the place goes nuts, and John Cena just comical in terms of his facial reactions here as he gets the hot tag, shoulder blocks onto JD, and then we get all three delivering slams, five knuckle shuffles, and a three-person AA onto the three, and a triple pin in 10 minutes and 4 seconds for a very entertaining spectacle here for the show, and fine use of John Cena for about 90 seconds.
Really nice cameo for the surprise of the what I think might be expected out of a Raw after WrestleMania, and certainly does add to the star power of a show like this, and gives R-Truth a big a childhood dream type of moment.
This whole show was about just giving the audience all this cool stuff. Like, that was the whole 3 hours, was just shouldn't delivering.
Shouldn't every show be that?
I mean, it's an idea, but I mean, all I could think about was the amount of heat that was like left on the table for so many segments here. Imagine if John Cena didn't show up. Man, the Judgment Day would be so hated, right?
Right. Yeah.
Then we go to Bronson Reed after winning the Andre Battle Royal, and he cuts a promo because he's going to be in a fatal four-way tonight with Jey Uso, Ricochet, and Drew McIntyre to determine the next contender for the World Heavyweight Championship. And this is where we get the screen glitch. That was our on-screen tease of whoever this is going to be. SmackDown ad, all they promoted was Cody Rhodes will be on the show, as will Bayley in Detroit this Friday. Dominic and Rhea are backstage, and Dominic didn't think Cena was going to show up. He's still in the old era. Rhea says that Dominic put faith in Andrade and he was betrayed. And Dominic says, I'm going to go speak to Adam Pearce. And he is not out of the shot like a second before a chair nails Rhea in the head. And somehow Dominic has like missed this. Like, his back is turned and he doesn't notice this commotion because he doesn't return until like 2 minutes later. And it's Liv Morgan throwing this chair and attacking Ripley aggressively. And then Dominic returns and they do a pull apart with the officials. And Dominic, this is our cool production moment of the night. He swats the camera and tells them to go away. So the camera turns and just enters the arena. And it's one long continuous shot from backstage through the arena, through the crowd, into the ring for Indy Hartwell, who is already in the ring for her match with her opponent. It was cool.
It was very cool. Yeah, another really well-done sort of connecting shot between something that happens backstage to what's in the ring right now. You know, the chair shot came as a big surprise, I'm sure, to everybody at home and maybe even to Rhea Ripley as well. This was a... I wonder if
it almost felt like she was to get her hand up and hit
it. How do you get your hand up when it's to your side? You know, like they do this thing where, okay, we can't do unprotected chair shots anymore, so we will throw the chairs as hard as possible against guys. But usually people are able to get their hands up. In this case, Rhea was not able to. So I wonder if this was really a necessary risk. nonetheless, even the fact that we're having this conversation, I think, is of a benefit to Liv's current character. You know, this sort of very unhinged version of her that is just incredibly vengeful and at a different level than what we are used to seeing her as. I really continue to like her increased aggression, and I'm very excited to see the continued evolution of this character.
Yeah, it's always a fun post-WrestleMania program. The I didn't get booked at WrestleMania anger that fuels them.
Well, she's fueled just by Rhea taking her out for all those months, too.
Roxanne Perez is revealed as the opponent for Indy Hartwell, the NXT Women's Champion. Now, I don't think they specifically stated she was in the draft.
No, I don't think so, no.
But Perez goes after Indy's leg, and then Candace trips Perez, and Indy sees it. The official does not, and Indy is arguing with Candace on the apron as Perez then rakes the eye and hits her with the Pop Rocks to win in 2:45, and it's Candace telling Indy, I told you so, and it seems like we're going to continue this until Indy probably finally aligns with Candace LeRae, and we get some heel team out of this.
Yeah, very much so. I thought Roxanne, like, her heelish attitude looked really good here. She looks very confident as a character. She really does, to me, feel main roster ready, though it probably won't hurt her to have, like, a title reign on top as a heel for at least a little while longer down in NXT. But she, I thought, looked really good here on this big stage.
I totally think she could make the jump, and I think would fit in very well on either roster. Sami Zayn with his new shirt. Yo, Khadija, I did it. Can you imagine how many of these are going to sell next week in Montreal? And probably in many cities.
Probably plenty, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The crowd is singing along with his theme, and he puts over Gunther as the greatest intercontinental champion of all time, and said he got help from the fans when he doubted himself, as well as being with his wife and son right before the match, and his brother Kevin Owens giving him the encouragement as he walked out, but it says there's also one more person I need to mention, but before he can bring up that person's name, he's interrupted by Ludwig Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci, and Kaiser says, you're the IC champion, you look like all these peasants, like a bum after all the great work Gunther did for that belt, and they surround the ring, and then Chad Gable runs out and would set up our impromptu tag match. Before the match begins, though, we got a vignette for Sheamus, who has been out since that match with Edge in Toronto last August. It's been an extremely long, like, think about that. Adam Copeland has had multiple title runs in AEW since Sheamus last wrestled. So coming at some point, maybe they'll hold him off until the draft.
You would think so. I mean, maybe the week prior, just to kind of remind people, hey, this is Sheamus. Which brand is he going to go to? But either one, yeah.
Did you catch the line right after this vignette aired and Michael Cole said something like, you know what that means? And Pat McAfee yells, it's fight night. And Michael Cole responds, I really hope I don't have to say that anymore.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Cole is extremely entertaining when you are just listening super closely. And I mean, this man has just, he feels so free on these broadcasts. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sami Zayn and Chad Gable against Vinci and Kaiser. Good match here. I would say this was probably the best match on the show, like in terms of just like bell to bell. And I really enjoyed Zayn and Gable as a team here. I don't think they're probably going to explore them as a team, but they were really great here. And Vinci and Kaiser, they're great for this kind of a role as sort of your stand-ins for Gunther. Gable is suplexing both men in the ring, landed a cannonball off the apron, and then the diving headbutt before a chaos theory, but the tag is made, so they hit the Imperial Bomb. Zayn is in for the save, and Gable stops a second Imperial Bomb, and Kaiser comes off with a leaping uppercut, but Gable catches him in midair into a German suplex. Great sequence. And then Zayn and Gable do dueling rolling Germans, three of them each, and Zayn applies the ankle lock that Gable has taught him, but then Kaiser yanks Gable to the floor, breaks up the submission, and Zayn lands the exploder, is setting up for the Huluva kick, but he tags in Gable so that he can get the victory, hits the Huluva, and then a chaos theory. Gable pins Vinci in 12 minutes and 21 seconds.
Really good match, I thought. You know, a lot of the focus in this one actually was on making Gable shine, and I think they're doing their best to keep Chad Gable alive as a relevant character, despite not being at WrestleMania, not even accompanying Zayn or playing into the finish at WrestleMania. This, though, however, obviously built him up for that tag the title match next week. And in some ways, I thought like Gable was even positioned as almost a superior competitor to Sami Zayn by, you know, being his coach and being the one to get the pin.
Jey Uso did a promo tonight. It's going to be a yeet down in this fatal four-way. Pierce and Nick Aldis are with NXT general manager Ava, and so they shake hands, and Aldis notes, great job signing Andrade. And I'm just thinking, like, they've just completed all these signings, like Bron Breakker and Jade Cargill getting signed to SmackDown and Andrade just signing with Raw. It's like, are all these people now up for grabs in the draft? Like, what have you...
That's the indication.
Did you sign them to, like, what, a three-week contract, and then you're technically a free agent?
Yeah, I know. I mean, Aldis basically said it right here, you know, that Andrade is up for grabs. So you would expect the same with Braun and Jade. So what really was the point?
It was like weeks, months of negotiations in the case of Jade. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, maybe they should make a rule that says, like, we signed you to a one-year contract. You can't... You're not eligible to be drafted.
Ava just reiterates that, well, not just that we could see NXT talent in the draft. She specifically stated that some people could be going to NXT in the draft as well. So it looks as though it's going to be a draft involving all three brands drafting talent rather than just one-way traffic of NXT talent leaving.
Yeah, and how do they kind of position that within the draft itself? You know, does NXT get an equal number of picks in order as one of the other brands? I mean, in years past, they would give Raw more picks than the other. More than likely, I'm guessing they'll just announce a set of drafts, you know, in various tiers and just not really, you know.
It's one that I'm curious to see how the presentation is. It's like how many members of the roster are it's going to be... Oh, sweet. I'm going to NXT. Like, what a great step up for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe they should say all the undrafted talent goes to NXT, and then Odyssey Jones will have a place to be.
That would be a lot of people in NXT. Usually a lot of people get undrafted.
Yeah. Chelsea Green walks in. She complains about not being included at WrestleMania, and she's going to contact the top brass. And they said that they made a match for her tonight as a collaboration between Raw and SmackDown. So she's excited and is sent to the ring to find out who her opponent is going to be. And this is when we got a graphic of all the different TV sellouts and the cities that they have hit over the lead up to Mania and coming out of it. And Chelsea is in the ring as Jade Cargill's music plays. And they kept this one short and sweet with Green screaming that she did not agree to this and turns into a pump kick. And then she is lifted for Jaded. I will say this about Chelsea Green. She had like 2 minutes of TV time, including the backstage segment. And she used this for all it was worth. And her screaming at the top of her lungs before Jaded was hit, I thought, like, made this. It goes 33 seconds, all it needed to be. Jade just gets a dominant win. But, a lot of people were just praising, like, Chelsea Green making the most out of the least in terms of what she had on this show. And it was, fine for what it was. This is what the crowd wanted to see out of Jade Cargill. Just big spot and wins dominantly.
Oh, Chelsea, I think, is an excellent performer. I think in many ways you can't ask for a better person to be in this sort of like jester's role for the division. I think she is incredibly valuable. Might not necessarily get a match on WrestleMania, but on TV you'll probably see plenty of her. And for good reason. She's really excellent in here. This is a different platform for Jade, you know? Like, even though she's already on the roster, I think putting her as a surprise in a featured role on a Raw after WrestleMania, it continues to tell everybody that this person is a really big deal.
Sami Zayn catches up with Alpha Academy and wants to speak with Chad Gable alone and says, you know, you had mentioned that I owe you one. And I think we're even after I tagged you in at the end of the match tonight. Gable's like, what? And Zayn is only joking. He says, I know you want this belt. So he wants to defend it against him next week in Montreal. And that is going to be the match. So not Bronson Reed in Montreal, but instead Chad Gable for the IC title next week. And this will be interesting. I'm very curious to see how big this match is over the next week in terms of it's been like a week since I looked at the number, but they were like over 9,000 tickets out, and the Bell Center is a big building, and this should be like the main event of the show, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think is the streak being threatened? by this.
It depends what the setup is for the Bell Center. Like the Bell Center, I don't know how big they can get it for wrestling, but they can.
What was it for Elimination Chamber?
I'd have to look it up, but if you, I can look that up as we're.
Yeah, I think the booking of this one will be really interesting. You know, obviously it's double babyface, but it is Sammy in Montreal, so will they boo Chad Gable? I don't think so. I think you know, Chad Gable is the sort of type of wrestler that will have the respect of the Montreal crowd, but they will certainly be more in favor of a Sami Zayn winning. But I also think it's very likely that this somehow leads to Bronson Reed versus Sami Zayn. So I would expect Zayn to retain with perhaps some interaction from Bronson Reed leading to that finish. I also don't think this will be the end of this particular chapter with Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. The future of this program will more than likely be these two opposing each other. One as a heel, one as a babyface, and at this point, might be more likely to see a Chad Gable as a heel. But you know what? They could carry on this double babyface interaction for quite a while too.
I think you go with they're you know, double babyfaces here. Sammy's obviously the hometown favorite next week, but they have a hot match that Zayn wins, and it's Gable being frustrated that he got pinned by this guy again, and that can fuel a turn at some point. It doesn't have to be immediate, but I think that is, I don't think we're getting one match out of this thing. For Elimination Chamber last year, for the pay-per-view, they did SmackDown on the Friday and then Chamber on the Saturday night. They did 14,651 and 13,807 paid, according to the Observer last year. So that is kind of what we're looking at in terms of with their setup. But again, they are also flexible with the size of their set, and if there's that extra demand, I'm sure they will make room. Then it was Drew McIntyre coming out ahead of the four-way main event, and he gets on the microphone, which has now become a highlight of these shows, and calls it BS what happened last night. I was champion for 5 minutes and 46 seconds, which is longer than most of you last in bed. The crowd did not like this accusation. He says, Seth Rollins, I don't like you, but I respect you for going out on your Shield like a warrior. And it has been reported by Dave Meltzer that Rollins looks to be out for at least a couple of weeks, just dealing with his knee injury, that I'm sure he was, despite last week stating that he was at full strength, probably still dealing with the effects of that. But at least as of now, it's being reported he won't be out too long and was absent from television on Monday night.
And Drew clearly in.
Clearly appears to be in, yes. Mm. And Drew then refers to Damian Priest as the bondage Undertaker who screwed everything up on Sunday, calls Money in the Bank a joke. It's twice cost me my belt. Damian Priest stole it from me. Damian, you're only a transitional champion because that belt belongs to me. And the real cause of everything on Sunday was that prick CM Punk, who's a coward, sweeping my leg after I had turned my back and said, Punk, when you're ready, I'm going for the weakest part of your body. And it just so happens your entire body is the weakest part. I mean, Drew was great here. I thought this was one of the highlights of the show.
This was the most maybe pissed off in a long time we've seen a Drew McIntyre. And I mean, you know, after losing a title to Money in the Bank cash, and he really needed to be, he was just absolutely, absolutely great. Some great lines here. Did take the time to put over the outgoing champ, which again, they did in every single segment between Sammy, between Cody, and between Drew here. Gave that spotlight for, you know, the outgoing champions. And set up the Priest rematch here, as well as continued heating up the Punk program. So still a lot on the horizon for Drew. And you can at least expect him to, you know, stick around probably. Well, I guess no reporting about whether or not he signed a new contract yet. But I would say it's almost surely a lock. He stays until Clash at the Castle.
Yeah. Whether pen has been put to paper, I think everyone would be floored if this was not. And not like it just would seem that like this guy is having the run of his lifetime. And there's always a point in your career where it's probably good to take that break, even if you don't want to go elsewhere, just to mentally recharge. I would strongly argue now is not that time for Drew. So we have Ricochet, Bronson Reed, Jey Uso, and Drew McIntyre. Winner gets the next world heavyweight title shot. They didn't specifically state if this will be at Backlash in France, although I think most would presume that to be the case when the show is only a couple of weeks away. There's a table set up in the corner. Bronson puts Jay through that table. Reed and Drew then square off with chops, and Drew manages a Michinoku driver onto Bronson Reed, which looked impressive. Ricochet and Jay are in with double super kicks on Drew. Then Reed joins them for a triple set of super kicks on Drew McIntyre before Jay and Ricochet take out Bronson. Jay spears Bronson. Drew's in the save, makes the save, and all four men are down. Then Reed hits a DVD and senton, climbs to the top for the tsunami, which Drew yanks at him to stop, and they go to the floor. The desk gets cleared, and Bronson Reed is placed on the desk, and he's just laying there. Jay gets stopped on top with an enziguri by Ricochet, and Ricochet climbs with a springboard 450, putting Bronson Reed through the desk. Definitely the most impressive spot on the entire show. And
he also clearly looked at Samantha before doing it and said, "I'm sorry," before proceeding.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yes. Well, it was incredible looking. And Drew and Jey Uso are left alone. Jey Uso is selling the ribs, which are taped up from the night prior, and the spear off the stage to Jimmy Uso. And he gets hit with the Future Shock DDT. And as Drew sets up for the Claymore, CM Punk appears ringside, grabbing Drew's leg, and this allows Jay to spear Drew and hit the Uso splash to win in 1739. Another strong match. I would say this and the tag earlier were the standout matches, and with Damian Priest as champion, it can allow you to go with a challenger that is you can get by with a challenger at the level of a Jay Uso for a one-month program to build things up. But Jey Uso will get the title shot. Date to be determined, I would suspect France, but that was the conclusion of the show, and Drew gets screwed again.
Yeah. I mean, this match for me, so much of it was filled with commercial breaks because they had to make up for the first hour, so it didn't really hit for me. Raw after Mania, I think, is rarely about the in-ring matches. It's about, you know, the surprise appearances, it's about the promos, it's about the celebrations, and it's about the jumping off points to future programs. And I thought all of that was very well established in many cases on this show. The Rock, Paul Levesque, Cody Rhodes first 45 minutes of this entire thing, they were long, but they were also deservingly long, because this really did need to feel like the beginning of a new chapter, or at least an epilogue to, you know, a years long story that they've been building, several years long story that they've been building with this Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns storyline. Also a setup, of course, for next year. And then after that, you know, you had some surprises in the form of your NXT champions appearing on the show. I do also see them maybe saving a lot more of those big announcements of call-ups for the draft that's coming up a month from now. But, you know, you got a Cena cameo here. So I feel very satisfied for a Raw after WrestleMania.
I thought this was as far removed from last year's Raw after Mania, which was the infamous show that Vince McMahon was backstage for, and just was a... It was just a disastrous show. I mean, one of the lowest ranked shows in Raw's history on Cage Match. I mean, just such a sour note that I think had just taken this show to such a level that Monday was all about sort of rebuilding the Raw after Mania as a thing. Tons of fan service, tons of surprises, just like a feel good show too. It's like we weren't going to do any heavy angles. This was all about letting the crowd go nuts and surprising them, and pretty much just a celebratory 3-hour night after an ultra successful weekend for the company, and setting a lot up. Like, as I came out of this show, and the big thing is Rock and Cody, like, I do feel like for maximum value, probably should be the match at Mania next year. And that's the program for your Netflix launch to lead up to next year's WrestleMania, which will be the first year that they have the Netflix effect to build up WrestleMania. And could you ask for a better match to market than Rock and Cody? That would be the direction I'd go. And if you get Cena for a big Mania program, like, you could have that as well next year.
Well, the big question is what Rock's schedule will allow. You know, if he happens to have this window available next year, then yeah, you could do it. But if he happens to be booked for a movie, maybe this will have to be a SummerSlam program. You know, Rock versus Roman is also a match that's out there. But, you know, we'll probably learn a lot more about that once we know when Roman might come back, and, you know. But that's also a story that they've teased as well.
Maybe battle for the bead.
Battle for the bead. Is that what you would call the pay-per-view?
I mean,
battle for the bead.
You know, you go from finish the story, battle for the bead. I mean, what could be better? You know how many of those things they're going to sell?
The necklaces.
The bead necklaces.
I wonder if they even sell them. I mean, why would I?
I never see them anywhere. They should be selling those. Hmm. You could throw a $50 price tag on it.
I suppose so. Now, is that offensive? Like, you know, is there some sort of like a sacred thing about it that exists in real Samoan tradition that maybe forbids something like that?
You know, I'm sure they would get over that very quickly.
Yeah, maybe once they get that royalty check. We have a number of super chats here, and I want to first of all go to this one from Preet, who sends $50.
What?
Preet says, it was so great meeting you two at the meetup. I've been listening to you guys in some form or fashion over a decade now, so it was a real long-time listener, first-time caller moment. Keep up the great work and a big espresso martini. Cheers. Thank you so much, Preet. And thank you for showing up to our Drinkers Pub meetup with us and Poison Rana and pretty much the entire, well, most of the, you know, post-wrestling hosts were there as well.
It was a really fun time. That was... Those are always my favorite parts of these trips, and this one was, it was great to meet so many people from all different parts of the world that had shown up for that. So a great turnout, and it was great to meet so many of you. I couldn't believe when I looked out, it was already, like, we had scheduled it for 2 hours, and it was all of a sudden, it was like 4:30.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you
the
so
time,
much,
like,
Preet.
Flew by, yeah.
Yeah, for that support. And yes, espresso martinis were enjoyed. At Drinker's Pub. Let's go to Ryan G, who sends $15. Thank you, Ryan. He says, thanks for all the great coverage this weekend. What is the level of interest in White Rabbit 2.0?
Wanted to ask you, Wei, because you were as engaged with that campaign as anyone. Even not even so much like your interest, but doing something that leans on that style, but also is kind of its own thing, too. I'm sure you're intrigued by this and how they executed a second time around. It was a very successful relaunch of the Bray Wyatt character in 2022.
I think the whole campaign with all its Easter eggs and HTML codes and, you know, coordinates and all that was some of the most engaged I've been as a fan. And some of the most engaged I've seen an online fan base. So this presents an opportunity to do it again. I am excited for the hunt. I am not as excited about a Bo Dallas return because I don't think he's the level of performer that a Bray Wyatt is. So what's at the end of all of this is not as enticing for me. Now, you can also maybe argue, like, did Bo Dallas ever receive, like, his proper, I guess, opportunity, you know, on the main roster? It's debatable, but the end result of it, I'm not as excited by, but I am very excited by the storytelling. And I think this run will take on a whole different meaning because of the, tribute aspect of it to a Bray Wyatt, you know, the sort of lingering specter of Wyndham Rotunda kind of like overseeing this entire story this time. So I'm very open to it. Again, not excited for maybe some of the matches or like just even arrival of a Bo Dallas in this form, but they could change my mind. You know, they could change anybody's mind, I think, with the proper story. Let's go. Thank you very much, Ryan, for that.
Thank you, Ryan.
Chat. Let's go up next to Jake from the Windy City, who sent $5. Thank you, Jake. He says, thanks as always for the great coverage. I'm surprised they haven't announced the location for Mania 41 yet. They would usually announce by this time.
Not just by this time. I was looking at this. I was curious when they announced Philadelphia. That was the summer of 2022 that they announced. So we're talking almost like 2 years in advance they had the Philadelphia one. And prior to that, if you remember, they announced like 3 years in a row of locations. I would imagine that an announcement is imminent because now is the time that people are already earmarking their travel plans for next year. So this is very late in the game by WWE standards for a WrestleMania announcement. I was thinking Sunday night made all the sense in the world to reveal it. But again, there is probably more to it than that. I mean, of just whether it's finalizing the agreement or they have some kind of rollout for maximum interest, I would think that an announcement is probably imminent for next year's location.
Thank you, Jake. Producer Ray.
Two-way Ray.
Is that the nickname now? Two-way Ray. Great work as always. Gents, hope you both have gained your bearings after a hectic week. Yeah. Thank you, Ray. And I hope you rest up ahead of this week's edition of the NWA podcast.
He's got a busy weekend. He's got UFC 300 and then the NWA podcast Sunday night.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ray, for your support. And check out the NWA podcast this Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, I think is the usual time they go live. So set aside 7 hours.
I think they'll get it through 30 minutes. I think they'll get through.
There's
a
lot
night.
For them to catch up on. Lastly, let's go to Graham, who sends $5. And he says, great coverage this past weekend. Thank you so much, Graham, for just simply sending a super chat. No question, even. Just wanted to say thanks.
Thank you very much, Graham. And all of you for your coverage and people that supported the Post Wrestling Cafe. We had a lot of bonus coverage throughout the weekend, including Kate from Montreal giving her thoughts on a lot of the non-WrestleMania matches going on, which there was a ton this past weekend. And then show reports from WH Park, from John Cena, the Poison Rana crew were filming their road diaries. I finally listened to Davey's show about his, he had told me in person about his plane ride. Dude, it was frightening. Absolutely frightening. I'm glad everything turned out okay for him and his trip to New York. And I hope his return was a lot less stressful.
I hope so too. I hope everybody got home safe, including all of you guys who listened to the show and might've made the trip. The WrestleMania weekends are always, at this point, very overwhelming, but a lot of fun. Like, there's no other experience that you can have as a wrestling fan that could be all-consuming like that. You want to go to forum.postwrestling.com?
We got a few pieces here. We'll start off with Muggin. This time a year ago, it felt like Raw after Mania had jumped the shark, but that was last year. Cody started his new chapter on Top of the World as well as Judgment Day. The Rock bowed out, but not without a warning shot. There was no Seth, Becky, or Roman, and Raw didn't suffer one iota thanks to the depth of its roster. Seeing Roxy and Ilya was dope, and I love that NXT is going to be involved in the upcoming draft. It was an entertaining show with the four-way being the standout. Drew can't catch a break, can he? This felt like a clean slate. I bet Roman will get voted off the island on Friday.
Well, they haven't announced Roman's appearance. They've announced Cody being there. No. I wonder if we'll see Roman at all in this, you know, post-WrestleMania.
I like the idea of him just disappearing and it's left for this question of how will he return. And yeah, I don't think you need him on the show at the moment. I think it's more impactful that he goes away for a long time. And then when you're ready to do a program, that's when he comes back. And it should be a months.
You will presumably see Jimmy and Solo react to the loss, and maybe they will give, maybe Paul Heyman as well. You know, they'll be there to give us some indication of like how the tribal chief might be feeling.
The group goes forward, much like, you know, DX after Shawn disappears. It's like they continue the group in their iteration of it, and maybe they double down if you are bringing in new members. Mm-hmm. And then again, it's Roman Reigns of like, how is he responding to like his leadership being usurped? The Rock like kind of dismissing him, like your story is done, you were beaten. There's a lot there for them to have, and this is sort of like the new chapter for the Roman Reigns character.
And do we see any indication of like Cody's direction for Backlash? You know, now that he is probably going to stay on a SmackDown.
I think you would want to, like, I would think by Friday you want to at least tease that because it's a few weeks. And obviously on the Raw side, like, there was nothing set up for Cody. And I would imagine that's because he probably has a SmackDown program going into France.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Cameron from Bristol, UK, who's a new patron. Welcome, Cameron. Welcome to the Polovec era. I love this, unlike last year. It didn't rely on complete nostalgia. We have NXT call-ups and new stories felt like how Hunter would refresh NXT. The opening segment went a little long, but it pushed home the emotional title win and carried on the momentum from night two. Gable and Sammy is a great combo, and I can't wait for them to pay off next week. It will slap.
Bet.
Ilya and Roxy debuting before being drafted is a great idea, and both got a decent enough reaction. Debuting them in front of a crowd was smart. In front of a big crowd was smart. The crowd stayed hot. Why? No women's tag title match. Replace it with a mid-card title and start again. The tag titles have had too much poor booking. Time to push the individual mid-card. Yeah. I I think you maybe at this point, like, you might have enough character. Well, you might have enough characters to suggest a mid-card NXT, sorry, a mid-card WWE Women's Championship. But then I think back to the past year, and maybe the answer is no, they don't have enough. In NXT, you do, because there are, I feel like, just as there's just as much airtime for the women as men.
And they don't even have tag titles anymore in NXT.
Mm-hmm. But on the main roster, like, the women still get a very disproportional amount of airtime. So I don't think there's any issue with, like, having tag team championships. You just have to treat them well. You just have to, you know, dedicate enough story and airtime to them to prop them up. So I don't simply think exchanging it for a mid-card title would be any sort of answer if the airtime and the quality and attention is the same.
Last one goes to Alex Francois, who says he just wanted to share a thought on the weekend as a whole. For my first WrestleMania weekend experience, it was incredible to see it firsthand. Not just the shows, but the atmosphere in Philadelphia was incredible. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me and my wife at Drinker's Pub. And I know you guys were super busy. It was a great way to start our last minute decision to go to night two. Well, we hope you enjoyed the second night of the show as well. It's interesting to see the... Obviously, I thought, like, night two is going to be the more well-remembered of the two nights. And, of course, it had the big Cody moment that was so significant and this huge payoff to the end of the Reigns title win or title reign and Cody winning. I would say, though, like, night one, I think the biggest negatives are it was a long show. You had the weather. But honestly, like, I thought night one, like, The Zayn Gunther match to me was still probably my favorite match of the two nights. Like, it wasn't the moment of the night, which was the Cody celebration that I think was the ultimate takeaway from the weekend. But I just think the night one show, it was like almost like not panned, but just I'm surprised there was like such a disparity in it, because I thought the night one show was just from like wrestling quality between Becky and Rhea and Sammy and Gunther, and even the main event, yes, too long, but I would say for those final 15 minutes were incredibly strong.
You might have people just simply prioritizing the emotional high of like a season finale moment, like, you know, the Cody win over Roman, over whatever match quality that even a Sammy versus Gunther was able to provide. You also had, you know, a cash in successfully with Damian Priest as well.
And Bayley and Io, I think, really over delivered from the build up to what the match was at the end. Like, night two was a really great show, and it was, I would say, the better produced show. Like, there was less downtime, and it was much more manageable show just in that sense. And of course, peaked with the ending as well. But yeah, if you combine the two, like, I think this was one of the stronger WrestleManias, like, especially of like the two night versions. Like, we haven't had like duds of these like two night events. I think the general belief is like the two nights so superior to the one.
Yeah.
Unless you're there live and have to get out of a stadium each night.
I think as a viewing experience, yeah, I prefer like what we've been having. Now, how much of that is just simply down to like the product being hot and the storytelling being better, and, you know, that alone versus...
No, it was a big factor on top of it. But I would state, even going back the last number of years, I mean, like Dallas was, you had some really great stuff there. Last year, you had the big Owens and Zayn tag title wins. It seems as though, like, I just think the two nights are so much more manageable. My question to you, as we end things off of our WrestleMania coverage, has Waiting attended his final WrestleMania?
It's at least a worthy question to ask. I mean, maybe ask me next year. I'm not sure.
How did you enjoy the differences of, you got the live experience and you got the broadcast experience?
I kind of got the broadcast experience both nights.
That's true.
In the press box, we were just watching on TV. It wasn't really a live experience.
Okay. Yeah. That is a good point. Well, that is going to bring an end to this Tuesday edition of Rewind to Raw. Up tonight, Braden Harrington and Davey Portman are going to be here on the channel with Up Next immediately after the post Stand and Deliver edition of NXT. So tune in for that. Wednesday, I'll be with Brandon Thurston at 3 Eastern, and we're going to be going over a lot of the key business stuff from WrestleMania weekend and looking at the whole handling of sort of Vince McMahon, who was the overshadowing figure, I would say, of both nights of WrestleMania in terms of its presentation and the message that was conveyed by the company. Stephanie McMahon showing up on the second night also noted that someone had shared with me that they had seen Linda McMahon at the show on Sunday, and Gabriel Iglesias posted a photo with Linda McMahon. So, I mean, she was there as well in the background on top of things.
That's a very strange sentence that you just said.
Yeah, Fluffy. Fluffy gets a photo with Linda McMahon to
of an interaction
her, her attendance.
Yeah, it's a WrestleMania moment. I'm sorry I missed it out on.
Yeah, imagine what reaction would Linda McMahon have gotten if she had come out to start off night two?
Maybe applause.
She is more of a political figure now than she is a professional wrestling figure.
True, yeah. But I maybe still met with, like, you know, similar reaction to Stephanie, I guess.
Well, there you have it. The McMahon status. We'll talk about that too on Wednesday. And then Wayne and I are back Wednesday night with Rewind to Dynamite. Whole schedule, postwrestling.com, and again, postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days of access, all of our extra shows, including Rewind Away, the whole archive of 153 editions of Rewind Away. And for Double Double Espresso patrons, multiple audio news updates from me, which I will be getting back into this week as well, now that I'm back in town and can focus on those too. So big thank you to everybody that we got to see in Philadelphia over the weekend. A huge thank you to the whole members of the Post Wrestling family, including Andrew Thompson, Jack Wanon, John Kleinchester, John Pine, and everyone that was out there in Philadelphia. WH Park, Rich Fan, John Cena, Braden, Davey, got to hang out with B Detroit, Jesse from the Six, who was off to Washington. The whole crew was out in Philadelphia. Almost. Our man Neil, the godfather of post wrestling himself.
Well, thanks to Jordan and his fiance Lily, we did have a nice little shrine built dedicated to Neil Flanagan. So he was present for all of our trips to the Rocky Steps and all throughout the city as well.
I've figured out how we need to hang out with Neil. We need to go to him.
Oh,
we travel to him.
Maybe a future show. All in. You want to go?
Okay, let's go.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll talk about it off here.
All right. That's it for us. Thanks, everyone. And we will speak with you on Wednesday.